Thanks for downloading a 3CR podcast. 3CR is an independent community radio station based in Melbourne, Australia. We need your financial support to keep going. Go to www.3cr.org.au for more information and to donate online. Now stay tuned for your 3CR podcast.
Welcome to Local Food Connections, a show about the power of locally grown food to connect us more strongly with our communities and the lands we inhabit. Local Food Connections is brought to you by Local Food Connect. We're broadcasting from Wurundjeri country and pay our respects to elders past, present and emerging. We respect the enduring strength of First Nations people and acknowledge their long heritage of agriculture and care for the land in which our food is grown. Today, I am very pleased to welcome Meg Ullman. Meg is a homeschooling mum, permie, and an advocate of the gift economy. Meg lives in Daylesford on Jarrah country on a quarter acre permaculture plot known as the School of Applied Neo-Peasantry at Tree Elbow University. And also Meg fosters fermenting groups, herbal gatherings and seed-saving initiatives in the local Hepburn area. You may have heard her partner Patrick Jones on the show in December last year, chatting about how their permaculture life challenges many modern assumptions beyond food. And of course, permaculture as a practice or as a movement is very much, as David Holmgren reminds us, not a form of cool organic gardening, but it's about care of the earth, of course, but also care of people and care in how we share with each other, which is central to Meg's lifestyle and advocacy. Patrick called for the recentering of the feminine as a counter to the effects of capitalism, colonialism, and scientism. And I hope to continue that conversation about recentering of the feminine with Meg, because Meg is a practitioner of many feminine arts, like fermenting. Hopefully, we'll also touch on low impact travel and non-monetary exchange. Meg, welcome to Local Food Connections.
Thanks so much, Anne.
So I'm interested, first of all, but in what you mean, you and Patrick mean by artist as family. Could you talk about that a little bit?
Sure. So Artist as Family is the name of our arts collective, and we are a performance arts collective that are trying to embed our arts practice and our subsistence permaculture life. So whereas when you think about an artist sort of in the modern realm, in the gallery space, they're often a solo practitioner. They might have a studio where they separate themselves from their family sphere, and they create a work that is then put on sale in a gallery. So it's quite separate from the living of the world. And we're trying to break down those barriers, so we are artists as part of our everyday life. So our children and our dogs and our goats and our wild microbes and the seasons and the winds and the soil are all part of our performance. And we're really trying to live our lives and just show that our subsistence permaculture can be a very creative act, that it's not just the mundanity of growing food, that it's also a poetic and spiritual act.
Right. So it has the quality of arts practice in the sense that it's beautiful, it produces beauty, it produces truth, produces love, and has that spiritual connection, because that's what art ultimately is all about, isn't it?
Ultimately, creating food is the ultimate act of creativity because it's what we eat. It's what fuels us. It's what fuels our poesis, our meaning making.
The production of food, and also the production of children, to recenter this in the feminine. Tell us a little bit about your homeschooling of your son Woody.
So Woody is 13, the equivalent of year 8 this year, and has never gone to school. And I hope will never go to school. But if he wants to in the later years of his high schooling, that's up to him. So we are very dedicated to community schooling, school of the world, school of life, where a chicken might be his teacher, or a goat, or the wind, or the rain cycle, or he's interested in hunting and foraging and woodwork, and he's obsessed with playing cricket at the moment. So we're looking at, or he's looking at what appeals to him in the world, and then if there is no teacher or mentor, then we're helping provide someone who can help him in that space.
Sure. So he's must have had so much more freedom than your average kid.
And he's responsible pretty much for his own time. So, he has a bit of structure. So 9 till 1, he's working in the home and community economies with us. And then 1 o'clock we have lunch, and then in the afternoon he has free time to do whatever he wants to do. And so in that afternoon time, he either has one formal lesson a week. Last year it was literacy. He had classes with a friend of ours. He's a teacher, and this year we're focusing on maths. Well, he's focusing on maths. Also in that time he has to do half an hour of reading and half an hour of journaling in the afternoon time. And also Patrick and I facilitate a bush school every Monday for kids who don't go to school, and that's called Forest and Free, and we've been running that for many years now. And so that's, great community of kids and families, who all want their kids to take risks, calculated risks in the bush. The kids climb trees, all have pocket knives. In the colder months, we have fires, and the kids hurt themselves, and the kids, that's part of their learning. And as we say, if you have cut yourself or been bitten or stung or burnt or scratched, then you've been in the forest. So if there's, oh, I've got blackberries, thorns in me, everyone says, congratulations, you've been in the forest. And it's just part of life. This cult of safetyism that we see, where kids aren't allowed to do anything, and it's safer for them to be, on a couch with a screen, that's not something that is in line with our values.
And it's probably not going to promote safety in the long run.
So we think, kids taking calculated risks and learning how to approach challenges is actually better for the development of the child. And we're seeing that in the kids. They're just, we also say hard bodies and soft hearts
Beautiful.
to really keep that. Whereas in the culture at large, it seems like it's soft bodies and hard hearts.
Wow,
We're flipping that too.
you're flipping that. You've also flipped off conventional living totally. What were you doing before, Meg, before you moved to Daylesford and
So I was brought up in the suburbs of Melbourne in Caulfield, pretty conventional suburban life. And in my early 20s, after I'd finished uni, I went overseas for 2.5 years. I shaved my head, I gave everything away, and just drifted. And I see that time now as, quite an important part of my personal development. Was quite a chaotic initiation, but I really used that time to unlearn a lot of the things that I've been taught as a young girl, and it was a real opportunity for me to decide what was important to me. How often do we think about that as young people? It's like not what the society at large the culture, religion, education system, whatever family is telling us is important. Like, what is actually important to me as a human being in this world, alive right now in this specific time? So that was, a real time that I used to really focus on what was important to me. And so then when I got back from that trip, I'm still working, living in Melbourne, living in share houses and working, and just saving a lot of money because I was, buying a lot of second or only secondhand things and just living very cheaply, riding my bike everywhere. And so when I decided to move to Daylesford, I've got an older sister who lives here, and she had three little girls, now grown women. But I really wanted to be a close auntie. So that was, just that family, and just so that was, really important to me. And then I met Patrick and his older son Zephyr, who was three at the time, and decided to stay. So
Now,
living pretty conventionally, really.
you feel you are living conventionally still?
No, but I
Oh,
was there. Definitely when
at
I
that
moved.
time, yes. Okay, so you talk about it's clearly important for you that you live according to your values, and it seems very much there's been a real commitment there, and that and lack of compromise, much fewer compromises in your family than in mine, for example, because I'm still in the system. What is it about permaculture that aligns with your values?
Oh, I think it's just a really beautiful expression of how to be in relationship with the world that is in a very loving, earth-honoring, people-honoring way. It's a really beautiful way for, I've heard Patrick say this before and I really like it. It's a way for second people like us who might be have come from rupture and disconnection from land and place as a way back to be in relationship with land and place and food and just our resources. For me, it's a beautiful model of how to live a more accountable life. And that feels very important to me, that I want to live an accountable life. I want to take responsibility for my resources as much as I can. And not outsource as much as I can, not outsource the harm that is done on my behalf. And I feel like permaculture is just a beautiful way into that, to live like that.
Now, if we in the West lived the average way, we're obviously taking much, much more than our fair share. So for you to live in a more loving way towards the earth and the rest of humanity, what have you had to forgo? And what have you been replaced it with?
Had to forego ego. That's probably a really big thing. And enter into a way of living that is much more has much more humility about it. And of course, there's that relationship between humus, like soil humus, and humility. And convenience is a really big thing. And living with speed. I just feel like, the way that we live is very slow and gentle. And, we start the day with a cup of tea after we've had a cold plunge. And to light, to heat the water in the kettle, first of all, we catch the water in our rain tanks. And to heat the water, we either in the colder months, we're inside with a fire on, and then outside in the warmer months, we're outside with a rocket stove. And so, either way, you need to have wood, whether it's a log of wood for the inside or kindling for the rocket stove. Even just that, having a relationship with a forest means that I can have a cup of tea.
So that seems right to you. That seems the right price to pay for a cup of tea.
And the right speed, that's right. And just to, there's every step of the way, it feels like it's a very conscious and deliberate act. It's not just switching, turning a switch on. And I understand that we have also swapped, we call it, we say that we are time rich and cash poor. And that's a very, also very deliberate prioritizing that we have made. because we want to have time. We want to have time to be able to walk into forest to get the wood or to, to harvest it sensitively with our neighbors and then bring it back here and then, heat our hot water. So it's much more, it's a slower way of living. And that suits me, and our family, and it suits definitely suits my nervous system. Yeah, I feel like in the last 20 years since I've moved to this area, going back to Melbourne for family events or something, a dentist or something like that, it just feels like Melbourne is sort of getting fast. We've gone in two different directions. It's not like Melbourne has stayed still while I've been, slowing down. I feel like the world is getting much faster while I'm trying to slow down.
In 2026, 3CR is celebrating 50 years on air.
Over five decades, we've been home to hundreds of shows, thousands of broadcasters and guests, and hundreds of thousands of listeners.
This February, we're aiming for 1,000 subscribers.
It's just $40 concession, $80 full.
Help us celebrate 50 years. Subscribe.
Disasters like flood, fire, and extreme heat can have a significant impact on people's lives. Community legal centres help people experiencing challenges posed by climate change and disasters to access the resources and support they need. Disasters can lead to a range of problems, such as damage to your home, poor conditions with your rental home, difficulty getting insurance, issues within families, at work, and with Centrelink payments. Community legal centres can be found across Victoria and can provide help if you've been affected by a disaster. To find a community legal centre near you, visit the Federation of Community Legal Centres website at fclc.org.au. You can also contact Disaster Legal Help Victoria on 1800 113 432 and go to its website for helpful information at disasterlegalhelp.org.au. The Federation of Community Legal Centres is a 3CR supporter. This is a Local Food Connection show on 3CR 855 kilohertz on your AM radio dial and 3CR on digital radio. You can visit the 3CR website and listen to the live streaming of the show. Today I'm chatting with Meg Ullman from Artist's Family, living as authentic a permaculture lifestyle as you can, I think. And we're talking today about recentering the earth, recentering people, recentering values such as love, and slowing right down to the speed of nature, or to the speed of our own nature, just about that, with that reference to the nervous system. And what have you gained? Oh, I think you've sort of told us, but so you've had to forego. Has that foregoing of convenience been a problem at all? Or has it been a smooth transition?
It's been a very gradual transition. So I feel like if it was, we decided to, do everything all at once, I think that would be quite confronting. But, the whole thing of, collapse, with collapse coming, it's better to do it slowly than just to, there's no electricity and how are we all going to adapt? It's like we're doing it. What is it now? Like adapt now, beat the rush, or something like that. Something like that. Yeah, I feel like the skills that we are learning, reclaiming, remembering is also, I think, one of the biggest things that I've gained is a sense of meaning. And there's a whole thing of climate, people are saying now climate change is a hoax or a psyop or whatever. Like, even if it is, it doesn't matter to me. I'm still going to live like this, because it's being, living this quietly and deliberately, it gives me a great sense of meaning and purpose.
Now tell me about some of the skills that you have developed, because I know you're adept at a lot of homemaking, traditional homemaking skills.
First of all, I'd like to say that when I first started living like this with Patrick about 20 years ago, I had no practical skills, that I didn't know how to do anything. You know, I'd been industrially educated, primary school, high school, university, and really I didn't know how to do anything for myself, because I was a modern feminist and I was an office worker, which in one part of society that is seen as the ultimate, where you can outsource everything. But in the way that I wanted to live, yeah, I just felt quite hopeless, that I wasn't able to do anything for myself. So Patrick came to this relationship with a lot of skills. He had grown up in the Southern Highlands of New South Wales on some land, and has never really had his relationship to the land severed. So he had growing, gardening, building, making skills. And also it was a reframing of the things that I did know how to do, and seeing that actually as a valuable skill. That I have always been very frugal, and I thank my dad for imparting those skills to me, and that I've always been very good at doing without, making do with less, saving money, buying secondhand, just going without has just been part of my upbringing. And I've always been, also because of my dad, I grew up in a bike riding family. So we'd go on Great Victorian bike ride, you know, as family holidays. So also very grateful for that, that I had a car. Patrick and I both had cars when we came to this relationship, but I've always had a bike, and have always prioritized that. I've always been quite healthy and food conscious. But coming into this relationship, I was shopping at a supermarket, but was always, eating salads and raw foods and as unprocessed foods as I could. So I did have that consciousness. What else did I bring to the relationship? I think people skills and just ability to talk to different people of all, you know, across cultures and across ages. But I didn't know how to really grow anything or cook or eat just what was in season, or, you know, I was always not a recipe follower, but, you know, how do I know what to do with a leek, for example? But, you know, now it's like now I know what to do because it's just sort of second nature of how to cook and preserve, and also like how to, yeah, just preserve the bounty of the current season to prolong that, the foods, so we have them going into the winter months. So fermenting was a really big thing. Also, of course, it's good for the gut microbiome. And, you know, if you have a cabbage, for example, and you grow a whole lot of cabbages, they all come on at once. And everybody who comes over, you might want to give them a cabbage, but you also want to store some of that. And if you just put a cabbage in a cellar or in the fridge, it's going to deteriorate. But if you turn it into sauerkraut, it will, you know, add all those benefits of the fermented foods, including the wild microbes that we have co-evolved with, and also vitamin C and things like that. And so it doesn't deteriorate, you know, it deteriorates much slower than if you just sort of had a regular cabbage. So I've really fallen in love with fermenting as an expression of creativity over the years. And now we eat something fermented with every meal, whether it's cheese or a pickle. You know, this is summertime, so we have lots of pickles and krauts and things on the go at the moment. Yeah, also cheeses and different drinks, alcoholic drinks, non-alcoholic drinks. also medicine making and things like that for the cold, getting ready for the colder months.
So you make your own cider and wine or?
Yes, yep, both. mead. Also because this is apple growing region, we use apples a lot. Mm-hmm. And because we live mostly in the gift economy, we also try to think about all the different ways that we can honor and preserve the apples. So we have apple cider vinegar, we have apple cider, we have stewed apples, dried apples, apple mead, fresh apples, you know, individually wrapped and put in the cellar to have in the colder months. Yeah, so looking at all the different ways that we can honour the apple, but also all the different people who we're going to be in exchange with. If they've got kids, for example, then dried apple is up there. And, you know, if people, you know, it's like apple cider vinegar and things like that is also a high value.
We run out of time, and that brings us full circle back to that idea of creativity. So what you described about doing with one apple or, you know, one batch of apples is the ultimate in creativity, right? You don't just eat it. There's so many different things that you can do with it. So we didn't get to that great idea of the gift economy. Can I ask you, before we go, just a deeply personal, taboo question. How much do you think you're living on? Find out, how much money do you need to live? You don't have to answer that, by the way.
No. So I actually don't know. I've never sort of tallied it, but we live on about 25 grand a year.
Right.
For a family of three people.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah. So we are now debt-free.
Yep.
So that's of many, many years of living very frugally and just squirreling away every penny to help pay off our mortgage. And admittedly, the mortgage to begin with was quite low, and that now we wouldn't be able to afford a quarter acre block on the edge of town, on the edge of forest in this town. So I also want to acknowledge that privilege of, you know, being born where we were born and being able to buy land then.
Yep. Thank you so much. I'm sorry we didn't have more time to delve more deeply, but I urge everyone out there to really go and check out Artistus Family, because there is so much more to read on their website and to see all the videos that have been made about them. They also feature in David Holmgren's Retro Suburbia book. Just before we go, Meg, you've recently been the subject of a film. Film is called The New Peasants. Do you want to tell us a little bit about that?
Sure. The film is about our family, and it's a really intimate portrait. We had the director from Happen Film, Jordan Osmond, lived with us for 6 months, and we've worked on several other films with him before, and I feel like the intimacy that we have with him, the real love and the deep friendship, comes across in the film. And I feel like because he was living with us, we were able to, it wasn't just a fly in, fly out. We were able to, you know, go and knock on his door and say, you know, hey, Jordan, we're harvesting honey, or hey, we're harvesting acorns to make acorn meal. Or there's one scene, spoiler alert, but there's one scene because Patrick and I do cold water immersion. Mm-hmm. We have a little plunge tank, and there was ice. It was in the middle of winter, and there was ice on the plunge tank. So it was early morning. It's like, hey, Jordan, come and film. There's ice on the plunge tank. So I feel like, and when we're talking to the camera, we're talking to a dear friend. Uh-huh. And I feel like that intimacy definitely comes through in the film. And it's a real, we're really exposing ourselves in the film, because there's, you know, our family has a very deep grief story at its center, and that is in the film. And I feel like that's portrayed really sensitively. So, yeah, we're happy with it.
And where can we watch it right now if we wanted to?
It's available on a website called Kinema, which is like cinema but with a K. Yeah, so you can buy like an individual download, or you can host community screenings.
Okay, thanks very much, Meg.
Yeah, thanks, Anne.
Before we go, though, I also need to say that we're still in February, and we still are encouraging people to subscribe to 3CR on an ongoing basis, hopefully, so that we can stay on the air, because we depend on your subscriptions to do so, because we don't take government money or private enterprise money. But going back to Meg and Artistus Family, a really cool thing, they talk about living on $25,000 a year, and that yet they travel, not on planes. Did you get all the way to India?
We did. We hitchhiked to India.
From Daylesford to India. So it looked really inspiring. So hopefully you'll go and look more into the lifestyle of Meg and Patrick in up there in Jarrah country. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Anne.
You've been listening to Local Food Connections on 3CR, and today we've been speaking with Meg Ullman. Until next week, love the land you're on, share your surplus and take care of each other. Remember, if you want to support independent media, you can become a 3CR subscriber. You can do that by going online at 3cr.org.au. You can call 9419 8377 during business hours, or you can knock on the station door and you'll be let in to make your donation. Stay tuned now to 3CR for more Radical Radio with Latin American Update. Bye for now. We've been looking up.
We've been messing around. You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.